Greetings of love to each one this evening. Greetings also from the Providence congregation. I was blessed by the singing of the hymn so far this evening and also for the devotional meditation. A lot to think about. And the Word of God is full of truth for each one of us every day. And although we may read it many times over, there's still new truth for us. Because it's a well of life. It springs up to eternal life. The Word of God is like seed, and it brings forth its fruit in our lives if we are receptive to it. This evening's subject already been announced, dealing with the root of bitterness. Our title indicates that bitterness is something wrong. It's something with roots, and it is something that must be dealt with if it is present in any one of us. I believe that dealing with bitterness is something that we all may need to deal with at some point in our lives. I do believe, however, that some people struggle with bitterness more than others do. In any case, the root of bitterness must be worked on if the fruit or symptoms of bitterness are visible in my life and yours. Way back in the book of Deuteronomy, Moses warned the people of Israel this way. He said, "Lest there be among you a root that beareth gall and wormwood." It was a possibility way back then, and ever since then it has been a reality that people have struggled with. There can be a root that bears gall and wormwood. We go over to the text from where this title was taken, Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 15. It says the following: "Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled." Now, the first question we want to look at tonight is, what is bitterness? If you were to define that word, where would you go? Some boys like to find a green persimmon and to some unsuspecting individual say, "Here, eat this," and watch the facial expression as that green persimmon goes into the mouth. That humors some people pretty much. I don't know what the most bitter thing is that you know of. One of the most bitter things that I've ever taken in my life is malaria pills. I think that's probably the bitterest thing that I've ever eaten or had to take as medicine. There's other medicines that are really, really bitter. But if you think about something bitter, it's something we don't want to keep in our mouth very long. Bitterness indicates, by way of definition, it indicates something that is sour and acidic. Possibly you want to use the word acrid. Something that just draws your mouth up, something that just, ooh, we don't want that very long. Another meaning of bitterness, if you're looking at Old Testament meanings of the word, it's the idea of chafing. It's like wearing a shoe that's two sizes too small for you and jamming your foot in there somehow and then going for a walk. And then on top of that, carrying a heavy backpack with approximately 80 pounds. And even on a day like today, if you did that with a pair of shoes on, it was two sizes too small, and carrying a backpack with about 80 pounds and just let that hang there for about 2 or 3 hours, you would feel pretty disgusted or worn out, or I don't know what all kinds of words to use by the end of the afternoon. But that's what bitterness is. It's very uncomfortable. And it's very heavy to carry around. Also, Old Testament word meanings give the idea of great discontentment. Just very discontent. In the New Testament writing, it sheds a bit more light on the subject. It means to pack or to be pressed down. Just think of that backpack. Just add another 40 pounds to it. How does it feel? just to be way down with that. I had a brother-in-law one time when they were unloading a feed truck. The feed came in 100-pound bags, and he decided we're going to do a little test here and see who can carry the most. And somehow he managed, although he's a fella shorter than I am, he managed to get 300 pounds on his back. Just carry it for a while. That's bitterness. Something extremely heavy. And if you don't like that word picture, then think about being in an extremely tight place. You know, children sometimes they curl up in a little closet somewhere and hide from mom or dad for a little bit, or by playing hide and seek, they'll get themselves in a very tight and crammed up place. But usually they don't stay there very long. But just stay there for an hour or three or five. Just stay there in a very tight place. Then it's a little word picture of bitterness. Dictionary meanings that apply to bitterness: causing grief or pain. Something that's hard to admit, something that's hard to bear, just can't stand it. It's just so painful, don't even go there, and yet it nags the mind again and again, continuously. Something that is painful, something that is distressing, something that is grievous and heavy. But I want to remind us this evening, before we go any further, that bitterness is a choice. We can decide if we're going to be bitter, or we can decide if we're going to lay it aside. And the purpose of this address this evening has to do with dealing with it. Bitterness is a choice. We can choose to be bitter, or we can choose not to be bitter. Now I would like to look at what I have titled, the second point, the adverbs of bitterness. And I'm not sure if it's all adverbs, but I'm going to share a little list of things that may cause or have caused bitterness in the lives of some people. And you decide whether it's an adverb or an adjective or whatever it is, the how, when, where, and why of bitterness. What makes it happen? And maybe you, as we go down through this list, can say, right there is where I've had bitterness. Maybe you can say, I've seen that in such and such a person. I wonder. Because when it's all said and done, I've already indicated this evening that most of us at some point in life have struggled with bitterness. And some of us struggle with it more than others. Number one, adverbs of bitterness, the how, when, where, and why. Prolonged stress. Just a continual stress situation. No way out. Just continuously going on in stressful situations. Maybe some of us feel that way sometimes. Something that just doesn't let up. Another reason for bitterness is heartfelt grief. A deep grief. Using the example of Hannah in 1 Samuel chapter 1. There she was, the second wife of a husband. The other wife was able to have children. She was not. And she got into such a state of emotional and physical, could we say depression or whatever have you, that she wasn't eating anymore. And the Bible tells us in 1 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 10, Hannah was in bitterness of soul and prayed unto the Lord and wept sore. Why? Because of her barrenness. It was something that really was a deep, heartfelt grief to her. And God met her need, and God blessed her. And she thanked God for it after it was all said and done. But for her at that time, it was like a never-ending dark tunnel. Heartfelt grief. And some of us have experienced heartfelt grief. We can decide whether we'll be bitter or not. Another reason, another adverb of bitterness: lost opportunities. This can happen in life. That job that's right there, it's just right there, and you get there, and somebody else was here before you. It happens sometimes in social relationships. It happens sometimes in things that are much more important than that, as was the case of Jacob and Esau. Jacob, the supplanter, the tricky one, came up with that clever plan the day he came in there. Esau came in there. He said, "I'm faint. I'm about to die. Give me that soup that you have made. I need that soup. I need that food right now." And Jacob just cleverly said, "You know what? I'll give you this soup in exchange for the birthright." And I don't know what time transpired between that event and the day whenever Isaac called his son Esau into his room and said, "Son, I'm getting old. I want you to go out and get some venison, prepare it for me the way I like to eat it." And of course, Rebecca was around the corner evidently listening. And she calls in Jacob and says, "Jacob, come here, we got a little something to work on here." And we know the story, at least I think we do, how Jacob quickly prepared himself, prepared some good meat, his mother having prepared it, and takes it in there. And Isaac, being dim of vision, somewhat confused and somewhat perplexed, wondering how in the world this deer, which would have been venison, woman more probably than not, come out so quickly to Esau, and he was able to get it dressed so quickly. All perplexed, and yet it was what he had said he was going to do, and so he goes ahead and gives the blessing to Esau. I'm sorry, to Jacob. Esau comes in sometime later, had prepared his meat, prepared his things, and somewhere in that whole panorama, it began to strike home with Esau what happened. That opportunity of having the birthright, two times more than any one of the other siblings, of the father's possessions and so on. It hit him. It just like came right on top of him. That whole impact, this whole thing now is on his shoulders. As Esau realized the impact of losing his birthright and what Jacob's trickery cost him, it says he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry. Some lost opportunities are because of our own choices. And some may have been manipulated by someone else. And when we realize that we lost that chance, we can become very, very bitter. And it has happened in life that somebody made a wrong choice in their youth, pursuing some diversion or some pleasure. They made a wrong decision and led them down a wrong road. And 5-10 years later, they wake up and realize, "Look what I lost. Lost opportunities." And when they wake up in that moment, they can wail, they can cry. And some people just continue on and continue on in that train of thought because it was just a lost opportunity. What can you do? Others repent and come back and try to do what they can to make amends. Others of these lost opportunities are because someone else was playing with circumstances. Someone else was juggling some things around. And whenever that happens, it can really cause bitterness too, because you can see, you can think about decisions that were made, decisions outside of your control, and because of it, you were the loser, so to speak. And sometimes those things can cause real bitterness, and it's not easy to justify. It's not easy to deal with it sometimes. Another adverb of bitterness: how, when, where, why. Bitterness occurs as disappointments in life. The Bible teaches us in the book of Proverbs that a foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her that bare him. Oh, what a sad thing when a child just turns wrong and goes down a wrong course. A disappointment. And those disappointments are many, 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 and happen multitudes of times in life. Another reason why bitterness occurs: hurts and emotional pain This goes right back to the prolonged stress we had at the very beginning. Hurts and emotional pain, especially if it goes on and goes on, month after month, possibly year after year, and just continues and continues and continues. And this pain just doesn't go away. And the effects of whatever that just weigh upon the heart and mind just stay there and stay there and stay there. It's so hard sometimes. And if this stays there for indefinite periods of time, it can eventually cause bitterness. Another reason of bitterness is a situation in which there are seemingly no options, no way out. In 2 Kings chapter 14, we know that the people of Israel were in a very bad state of affairs at this time in their lives, serving other gods and serving all kinds of, under all kinds of heathen kings and dealing with all this, and God trying to send his prophets in there. But the Bible speaks here about the situation of Israel, 2 Kings 14, verse 26. For the Lord saw the affliction of Israel, that it was very bitter. For there was not any shut up, nor any left, nor was there any helper for Israel. There was no one to help them anymore. They were totally boxed in. It was totally a gone case. As it were, finished. There was nothing to do anymore. No helper for Israel. And God saw that. And maybe that's the way you feel tonight. There's no way out. I'm in this bad situation and there's no way out. Let's go over to Lamentations. Jeremiah felt that way. Imagine the prophet Jeremiah. What prophet didn't give more time and energy into a more worthless cause than Jeremiah? Imagine it. God told him from the day he called him, he said, those people will not listen to you. They will not. He said, you're going to preach, and it's going to be, their heart, their faces are going to be like an adamant stone, and it's not going to move, and it's not going to change, they're not going to repent. But he said, you go preach anyhow. And Jeremiah prophesied and preached and suffered persecution in different ways and different times, and they went and dictated that whole reading, the Baruch. Wrote out, and what did Jehoiakim do? He went with his penknife and sliced out one page after another page and threw it into the fire. And after it was all said and done, did God say, well, I guess he threw away that book, that's it? No, God said, make another book. So he dictated a bunch more times, and the scribe wrote out the words, wrote one after another page, and how many, I don't know how many it was, but it said many more words yet. And who was going to read that one? And at long last, Nebuchadnezzar comes up and destroys the land and hauls everything off except a couple people that were left and leaves them under this Gedaliah, I believe. There was some revolts and some stuff going on in between there. And Jeremiah says, people, please be happy just to stay here in this land. But did they listen to him? They sent for private conversations. At one time, Zedekiah says over there, he says, Jeremiah, come in here, we want to talk a little bit. He says, is there any word from the Lord? And Jeremiah told him, but Zedekiah didn't listen. Gedaliah didn't listen. And eventually they all wound up in Egypt where God said you should never go. And there Jeremiah was tagging along with a whole batch of them. And he gets to the end of this whole thing and he sits down and writes the book of Lamentations. I just want to scan a couple verses here in Lamentations chapter 3. And maybe you feel the same way tonight as this man did. Verse 1, I am the man that hath seen affliction by the rod of his wrath. He hath led me and brought me into darkness, but not into light. Surely against me is he turned. He turneth his hand against me all the day. And he talks about how his health is failing. He has set me in dark places, verse 6. Verse 7, did you ever feel like Jeremiah in verse 7? He says, he hath hedged me about that I cannot get out. He hath made my chain heavy. Does that sound like something like we described in the beginning, being in a tight, hard place? Verse 8, also when I cry and shout, he shutteth up my prayers. Did you ever have that feeling when you prayed that God didn't hear you? Verse 9, he hath enclosed my ways with hewn stone. He hath made my paths crooked. Now, if someone were to box you in with a bunch of these big limestone rocks that lay around in some of these fields and buildings are made out of them, just build a box and that's where you had to be. And if you felt that God put them there, that would be totally worse. Jeremiah says, "He hath enclosed my ways with hewn stone. He hath made my paths crooked. He was like unto me as a bear lying in wait, and as a lion in secret places." Verse 12, "He hath bent his bow and set me as a mark for his arrow." Imagine that. Jeremiah says, after all this that I've gone through, I feel that God has that I'm his target right now. "He has set me as a mark for his arrow." What a predicament that would be. "He hath filled me with bitterness," verse 15. "He hath made me drunken with wormwood. He hath broken my teeth with gravel stones. He hath covered me with ashes." Verse 18, "And I said, my strength and my hope is perished from the Lord, remembering mine affliction and my misery, the wormwood and the gall. My soul hath them still in remembrance and is humbled in me." Did you ever feel in that kind of predicament? Is there anyone here that knows what that's like? We might just let that there. We're going to continue with more adverbs of bitterness. How, when, where, why? A bad or maybe unpleasant home situation. Think of Joseph for a few moments. Joseph, what a wonderful young man he must have been. And yet, his brothers hated him. He was his father's favorite son. But was that Joseph's fault, perchance? Was it Joseph's fault that he had those dreams? Was it Joseph's fault that one day his father made him the coat of many colors? Was that Joseph's fault that that happened? This is one place where bitterness may not have been a result of what you yourself did. Sometimes bitterness that arouses from a bad home situation is not the fault of the victim. It might be someone else's fault, but it can cause bitterness. Thinking of a relative of mine whose father was a preacher, and he stood before congregations of people probably much larger than this one, and he was well known. And yet this father ruled his house with an iron hand. And one area where he was very, very disciplinarian was wherever a child would come home with a low grade on a report card. And I had another brother-in-law that sat in the same classroom and said that that fella and his brothers would come front whenever they got the report cards and opened up the report card and saw a certain grade below a certain standard in that report card. They'd come front to the teacher's desk and kneel down and wail and cry, because they knew that if they got home and that their dad saw that terrible low grade, they would be tied over a 55-gallon drum with ropes around in the front and the back and their hands tied on the front side and their legs around the back side, and they would be beaten until the dad was done beating. Let me tell you tonight, if that has ever been your experience, you have a high chance to be suffering a bitterness tonight. And it's such a sad thing that that kind of stuff happens and has happened. And sometimes it happens even in very conservative settings. And it's a pain. It's a bitter thing to face that type of stuff. Unjust punishments, and the list could go on. We might touch that just a bit later. Adverbs of bitterness: the terminal illness or death of a family member or a close friend. After losing her two sons and her husband, Naomi, in Ruth chapter 1 verse 20, said the following words. After she lost her husband Elimelech and Mahlon and Chilion, her sons, she said, "Call me not Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me." Do you know what Naomi means? Naomi means pleasant. Do you know what Mara means? Mara means bitter. Almost always, people who struggle with bitterness as a result of illness or death have, or can potentially have, or develop intense bitterness against God. Just like Mary and Martha, I think it was Martha actually that told Jesus, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. And somehow they hold that illness, terminal illness, if you please, that death, they hold that on God's account. In some cases, it seems impossible to ever change the feelings of bitterness toward God that develop in a moment like that. It is so sad. There's a man that lives not too far from here. And I was talking to him one day. He seemed like he was frustrated about something. He comes to our shout sometimes, and I said, hey, how's it going today? You thought about God today? He said, I just want you to know, I don't have much time for him. Talking to God, he raised his finger like, I don't have much time for him. My son died at a premature age, and my son wasn't ready to die. And he said, I kind of hold it against him. He didn't have to do that, didn't have to take my son. And people go on with that, thinking that they can blame God for this terminal illness, thinking they can blame God for the death that occurred, a bitterness that just grinds away at the human heart. Another example of this, Jeremiah 35:15, a voice was heard in Ramah. Lamentations and bitter weeping, Rachel weeping for her children, refused to be comforted for her children because they were not. This was a reference twofold. First of all, it was a reference to the Old Testament occasion whenever Rachel gave birth to her son Benjamin and called him Benoni. And the midwife said something to the effect that, fear not, you brought forth this son, but in the I'm using a Spanish word there, in the birth, the boy she died. The birth of the boy, she died. And it was a bitter time, and it was a hard time for the family. I'm sure it was. It was a reference to the time looking forward from Jeremiah's time, the one who wrote it, to the time whenever all children 2 years and younger in the Bethlehem area were destroyed. Why? Because the wise men had come to worship the little boy, the newborn king, Jesus. And as they came to worship, they kind of got lost. They went in to see King Herod and says, where's the king of the Jews? And he says, go find him. When you find him, come back and tell me. And the angels told him to go home another way. Herod gave him a little time, and they never showed up again. And since they didn't show up, he says, go out there. He told his soldiers, go out there and destroy every child 2 years and younger. Now let me ask you a question tonight. What kind of wailing and bitter weeping would be across the greater Myerstown area tonight if every child 2 years and younger was to be destroyed and slaughtered by some brutal soldiers? What would happen? What would the effect of that be across the Amish and Mennonite community and even larger spectrum of this area if that were to happen? It would be sadness and much crying. Imagine the family that has one that's 2 years and 10 months, a year and 10 months old perhaps, and a newborn that just arrived. Two of them in one house. Do you think that would cause any bitterness and weeping? Do you think that would cause any tears to flow? Absolutely it would. And whose fault was it again? Because of some ungodly king. It happened in history. Another reason why bitterness occurs is a sad experience in church life. The one thing that ought to be the most precious and dear and loving relationship, apart from that of a godly home, is that of a Christian brotherhood. And whenever one brother starts to fight another brother and one sister starts to fight another sister with words and with gossip and with all kinds of feelings, and one minister can't get along with another minister, or whatever the situation may be, and the young people look on and say, you know what? Huh. This is supposed to be the people of God. This is supposed to be the people that are holding forth the light of truth in our generation. And they begin to look at that and say, you know what? Not for me. Proverb writer says, a brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city. Have you ever seen that in your life? Or because of church, struggle and turmoil and just can't get along, somebody got bitter. Another reason for bitterness is a serious financial setback or bad circumstance, possibly financial exploitation. Do you realize that there are families wherever the children are going up over 20, 23, 24, 25 years old and can't ever get a start on their own? Why? Because dad says, it comes back to me. Your earnings come back here, back to the home. You aren't getting anywhere in life. Financial exploitation, financial setbacks, bad circumstances, things that just completely go upside down financially. And that can cause bitterness in a real way. Back in the book of Exodus, it talks about how the children of Israel under Egyptian rule and under taskmasters were having a very hard time of it. And it says in verse 13 of chapter 1 of Exodus, and the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor, and they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and in brick, and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with rigor. And if you think about the cracking of the whips of those taskmasters, that was bitterness in the big time way. And it was financial exploitation, that free labor, if you please. And if you've ever been in a place where you worked and worked and worked and worked and worked and never really saw much for it, it can cause bitterness in your life. Point number three, where is the root of bitterness? What is at the root of unforgiveness and bitterness? Where is the root of that in your heart and mind? From my limited understanding of this subject, bitterness lies deep in the spirit and soul of a person, way down in there. It's way down in. It's invisible. But the fruits and the symptoms of bitterness come out. Proverbs 14, verse 10, the heart knoweth his own bitterness, and a stranger doth not intermeddle with his joy. The heart knows. You yourself know when that bitterness is down in there. And people around you soon see the fruit and symptoms of it. If it's invisible in my life, it eventually comes out. If it's invisible in another life, it becomes known. James 3 verse 14. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. Spanish gives the idea, if you have bitter jealousy and rivalry in your heart, don't lie about it. Don't lie against the truth. Don't act like it's not there. What are the symptoms of bitterness? How can we know if we're dealing with a root in our lives, that symptoms are showing out? Fruits of bitterness, what are some of its symptoms? Again, this list is not all inclusive, but a few that I've observed. Number one, a critical spirit. Critical spirit. Quick to criticize anyone or anything. An expert at fault finding. This is not good enough. He did okay with that Bible reading there, but if only he would have thought about this yet. Yeah, the song leading, it was doing, he did okay, but the selection was whatever. His style was okay, but. And he's a pretty good farmer, but. If only he did this right. And he's, the vehicle, yeah, it's a pretty nice vehicle, but. And then you go on and criticize that yet. And yeah, she does housekeeping pretty well, but. And then you go on with the list of criticisms about the housekeeping. And he's a good business operator, but. And then they go down a list of criticisms about it. An expert at fault finding. This isn't right, and that's not right, and if only they would have done it this way. Critical spirit. Another symptom of bitterness. Number two, rehearsal of the dark moments in life. The bad experiences of interpersonal relationships, maybe in the home, maybe in church. Maybe that teacher way back there in school when I was third or fourth grade and she did this or he did that, and just go over it and go over it. And you get to know this person, they're kind of quiet and kind of timid, kind of standing back. And what do you? And after you get to know them a little bit, this story comes out. maybe even in business life. That person way back there 10 or 15 or 25 years ago that I lost $30,000 because of some business deal. And because way back when I was a teenager, something happened in church and just messed us all up. And they just love to go over that dark and ugly story again and again and again. Third symptom of bitterness, continuous griping over pet peeves and personal grievances. Yeah, I just can't stand this, and I just don't like that, and this over here doesn't suit me, and that over there just, it's not my, according to my taste, and that over there I just can't get along with. Continuous griping over those pet peeves and this little thing and that little thing that I just can't stand. Fourth symptom, too much focus on oneself. I'm sure we've all heard the little saying, a person wrapped up in himself makes a very small package. There was one time this woman was talking about herself and her things and her stuff and her trips and her all the things she's involved with in her house and her vehicle and her flower beds and her stuff and what all she's doing in her health, and went on and on and on. And finally she looked at the lady she was talking to and she said, well, I've talked about myself quite a while now. What do you think about me? And her whole idea was self-centered. The whole world rotated around her. Another symptom, Romans 3:14, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. If bitterness lies in your heart and mine tonight, the mouth will let it known. It will come out of the mouth, what is going on in the heart. If bitterness is down in there, it's going to come out through the mouth. Another symptom of bitterness is a general unrest in life. Trying to distance yourself from that bad person of your youth, that bad business situation at one time you got entangled up with, that bad family relationship, that bad church relationship, if you please, that ever made you bitter in the first place. And maybe buying a new car, maybe getting another house, maybe moving to another state, maybe moving to another country will help that. Just get away from here where all this bad stuff happens. Bitterness, bitterness. A relative I was speaking of back in around the year 1999, and whether you feel he chose the right brand of vehicle or not is beside the point. There's many men sitting here that have a whole lot more financial assets than he did, but just to kind of get away from it all, he moved about 3,000 miles, maybe 4,000, from where he grew up to another part of the planet. He moved away. When he got there, he got established in some kind of a business and went into a Chrysler dealership and bought a brand new conversion van and a brand new pickup truck at one crack. I don't know how many of you could do that tonight. But what was he trying to do? He was trying to run away from those beatings over that barrel and the bitterness that was wound up in his heart. Now, I want to make sure that we realize something tonight. In most cases, bitterness, if not dealt with, will lead to more and more sin and affect more and more people. If bitterness tonight in your heart and mine is not dealt with, it will just lead to more sin in my life and affect more and more people. One of his sons grew up under his iron hand and his disciplinary ways of doing stuff. And about 15 years of age, his father saw that he couldn't do anything more with this boy, and he basically cursed him and sent him on his way. That good-for-nothing, who knows what of a son. You know what that son did? He said, I'm going to make it somehow. I'm going to prove to Dad that I am somebody. When the Iraq war started, he was involved. He won some awards. I saw a picture of him standing on an aircraft carrier receiving an award from a general or a colonel of some kind, a big thing like so. Did that help him? Within a year and a half, he was in a mental hospital, and he's been in and out of about every mental institution in the area where he lives throughout the ensuing years. And to this day, I think he's still under heavy meds. Why? Because that bitterness that started way back there carried on and carried on down through the years. And I would wish that somehow he could be broken from the chain of bitterness and find freedom in Christ Jesus. Another symptom of bitterness is intense involvement in business life, extreme sports, erotic behavior and diversions. You wonder what it is that binds people in pornography and all kinds of things like that, and looking for the extreme sports and the next adrenaline rush. Sometimes it's just to get away from that bitterness that's just grinding away at them and making them so uncomfortable. And maybe the military, and maybe something else. And maybe another girlfriend, or maybe another who knows what. And just maybe working 10 more hours this coming week. Maybe that'll help me to work it off. The workaholic spirit sometimes is nothing more than someone trying to run away from bitterness that's just grinding them at the very core. The last and final point here tonight is how to deal with the root of bitterness. I think that has to do with the title of the evening. How to deal with the root of bitterness. Number one, we need to face the sin for what it is. We may not be able to control the things that brought bitterness into our experience, but refusal to deal with it, I say again, will only lead to more sin in my life and in others' lives, and yet affect more people. And I'm really convinced of that tonight. And you probably have seen someone in your experience who went down that trail of bitterness, and it went on from one generation to another generation. And unless that chain is broken, it continues and does not stop, unless God's power intervenes. We must recognize bitterness as sin and deal with it as sin. Number two, how to deal with the root of bitterness. If you feel tonight that you're struggling with bitterness, open yourself up for counsel to someone who is trustworthy and wise. Open yourself up for counsel. Look for help. If you're dealing with bitterness tonight in your life, with prayer and scriptural insight, such a person who is trustworthy and wise, scriptural insight, such a person may counsel with you and help you to see the issues at hand and discover what you should or could do about it. If this person is who they should be, they can probably help us to understand if we carry the blame ourselves, or if the blame lies largely with someone else. As I said before, sometimes bitterness was not really my fault, the thing that initiated the whole problem. But one thing that does happen, even if the blame was somewhere else, to the vast majority, there's a very, very high chance that we have also failed at some level in that relationship. Because none of us is perfect, and none of us has ever lived without holding at least a tiny bit of bad feelings about a bad situation that we have gone through. And if someone is willing to work with us, they can help us see where we failed. And if someone else failed, maybe they can help us to see that too. Number three, I would also like to mention tonight, if because of attitudes and issues you're looking tonight for advice regarding church fellowship issues, someone gave me this bit of advice about 8 years ago. It was about this very season of the year. I was standing out in somebody's driveway. They said, "Virgil, if you're looking for church advice concerning church fellowship, get your advice from someone who is satisfied with the setting he finds himself in, and not from a person who's just floating around and unsettled." And I have to give credit to the brother that told me those words. Because oftentimes, that has proven to be true. Another thing about dealing with the root of bitterness, dealing with the root of bitterness requires a direct and personal conversation with the person or the church setting where the problem occurred. Sometimes it does. The idea of getting back and facing personally that school teacher, that father, that mother, that whoever it may have been, that business partner where the whole thing really went awry in the beginning, sometimes we need to go right back there and talk about it. Sometimes that person may have passed off the scene of life and it's impossible to go back. But we should at least be willing to do that, if that were helpful. We should, in such a moment, be quick to acknowledge and apologize where we ourselves have failed in relating to a stressful and painful situation. How to deal with the root of bitterness, number 5. With prayer and fasting, seek a solution that brings peace to your heart. If you're in a bitterness, feelings tonight are just churning and grinding away at you, making you feel like you're in that shoe that's way too small with a heavy backpack of weight on your back, you might need to spend some time in prayer and fasting until you find peace and find joy in your heart again. Another way to deal with the root of bitterness is a heartfelt surrender to the perfect will of God. Do you realize tonight that the God of heaven, who created heaven and earth, knew the day that you were born, the home you would be born into, and the situations and circumstances surrounding your life? And do you realize tonight that God knows all about the things that provoke that bitterness that rise up within the human heart? And somehow or another, we need to have a heartfelt surrender to the perfect will of God and realize that if God allowed it and came into my life, there has got to be a good way to get through it. And God's almighty hand that has guided me in the past can guide me even at this moment. And sometimes there's some kind people around that can help us come to peace about it. It's not easy. If we go over to the book of Ephesians, it teaches us a little bit more about this thing of bitterness and what to do with it. I know that you know these verses, and the children sing them in that little verse song, Ephesians 4:32. It will tell you what to do. Be ye kind one to another, be ye kind. But the verse before it says, let all bitterness, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you. Put it away with all malice. Be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. To me, this evening, using these verses as a base, I would say that the best antidote for bitterness is forgiveness. When the offended, bitter person gets on his knees with the one who caused the offense, they can find common ground at the foot of the cross. And if the situation were even to be that bad, that it was like Stephen or Jesus, what did they say in their dying moments? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And there was no bitterness in their heart, and they were able to forgive and to go on. None of us have yet experienced what Jesus and Stephen did, and they were able to forgive at the end of their lives. Couldn't we? When we forgive from the bottom of our hearts the one who did the wrong, we can be gloriously free. And tonight I want to testify that that freedom is glorious. And it can be possible. Whenever we just say, I'm done with my feelings, with my hardness, with my unrepentantness. It is a delightful feeling to be forgive and be forgiven. That is a wonderful thing. I'd like to go back to Lamentations. We left Jeremiah hemmed in with stones and as God's mark for his arrow, God's target. That's where we left him. But you and I need to do what Jeremiah did. And we're going to read that now in Lamentations chapter 3 again. You know what? If you're dealing with bitterness tonight, I'd just like us to meditate upon what Jeremiah says here. Jeremiah 3 verse 21. This I recall to my mind. Therefore have I hope. It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, saith my soul. Therefore will I hope in him. The Lord is good unto them that wait for him, to the soul that seeketh him. It is good that a man should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord. This same man, just a few verses prior to this, was penned in with a big pile of rocks that God put there in his way. Looking at God as the bear lying in wait, with his teeth full of gravel. And here he's saying, it is because of God's mercies we're not consumed. Great is thy faithfulness. Your mercies are new every morning. And somehow, whenever that bitterness just is ready to grind us down, we need to get our eyes on God and his holiness and his love and his mercy and his grace. We just need that. I trust that these thoughts tonight can give us insight into what bitterness is, its symptoms, and most of all, how to deal with the root of bitterness. Why? Lest many should be defiled. May God bless you.